Good morning, everyone. The Senate Education Committee will come to order. Today is Monday, March 9, 2015. It's 8 a.m. We're in room 112 at the State Capitol. We have several bills before us today. First, Senate File 1002, Senator Hoffman, Individualized Education Plans. And we ask Senator Hoffman that you invite your testifiers to join you as we proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 1002. It's a paraprofessional training bill. With me at the table is Jonah Weinberg and then Laura Block and Alex Miller. Alex is a student and Laura is a board member of the Minnesota Organization of Fetal Alcohol Syndrome. Jonah Weinberg is the executive director of Autism Society of Minnesota. Senate File 1002 is not a complicated bill, but it is necessary. It requires that paraprofessionals working with students with disabilities be trained in specific disability of the student and students with whom the paraprofessional works. It's real consistent with the adage that the unique and individualized needs of the child and the disability and how it affects their education. That's the premise of 94-142, and this just broadens that and says this is what we're going to do. For example, if a paraprofessional works with a child who lives with autism, then that paraprofessional should know something about autism and how relevant and have relevant training with that individual. If a paraprofessional works with children that live with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, then we expect the paraprofessional should know something about the FASD, or fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and likewise have relevant training. Those are two examples of many. It goes on and on and on. For paraprofessionals who are unfamiliar with the disabilities of a child they work with can sometimes do more harm than good, because not knowing the unique and individualized needs of the child really is going against the grain of what the emphasis of special education services are. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, I would like to turn this over to Jonah Weinberg and then bring up Laura and Alex. So.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Welcome, Mr. Weinberg.
Thank you, Mr.
For each of the testifiers, please state your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jonah Weinberg, Executive Director at the Autism Society of Minnesota. Our organization has been serving Minnesota's autism community since 1971, and with more than four decades of experience in this area, we are certainly pleased that this bill is coming forward, because we really feel that it is going to help children with disabilities, whether it's autism or some other disability, to really get the benefit of the help that they need from the paraprofessional sent to assist them. As the senator mentioned earlier, if a paraprofessional doesn't really understand autism or the other disability they may be assisting a child with, they can really work against their progress and actually cause them more detriment than help. And to know that's really not to blame the paraprofessional, because we believe that they certainly intend to do their best, but without that crucial information, they can work against themselves and actually cause themselves frustration as much as the child. And we believe this is an important opportunity. I believe the committee has been provided with this handout of low or no cost training opportunities on these various disabilities, and the Autism Society is very pleased to play a part in this and be supportive in any way we can.
Thank you. And we'll hold on any questions, comments until the presentation is concluded. Welcome.
Hi. Alex Miller. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I am so grateful for the opportunity to speak to you this morning. You would never guess this, but I have neurological damage from prenatal alcohol exposure. This is the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. The ADA prohibits discrimination against people with disabilities for employment, transportation, public accommodation, communications, and governmental activities. We have come a long way, but we still have a long way to go. For example, all of us expect the same high-quality education as our peers, and we need the pairs that support us to understand our unique needs. This year, House File 1237 and Senate File 1002 proposes legislation that will require paraprofessionals in our school systems to have specific training on the unique needs of the kids they support. No one should assume what I'm going through. In my experience, the teachers and pairs who understood me were more flexible and more willing to work side by side with all the students with special needs. The pairs who understood my unique challenges made me feel like I could do well and motivated me to do better. The pairs who didn't made me feel like I was the weak link, or I wasn't trying, or I didn't care. It is frustrating because I want to explain to them what I am feeling, and they just treat me like I'm trying to get out of doing the work. The parents who understood were more like another parent. They were there for me and pushed me to the best I could do. They wanted me to do well. There should be a bigger view of learning abilities of all students. There is more than one type of animal in the jungle. You wouldn't expect a fish to climb a tree, would you? Instead of just telling us what to do, the parents who understood and cared and understood our needs made learning more fun. All educators should have training on specific needs because it will help them teach students of all challenges, identified or not. Looks can be deceiving. On some days, I may look fine on the outside, but the inside may be a total mess. For me, it was hard for me to get the assignments written in my planner, things put in my backpack that I needed, and to get those assignments completed and turned in. The parents who understood my situation were patient, gave me the support I needed, and they were there to help me. They understood that some days I was firing on all cylinders and everything was fine. They also understood that other days nothing was connecting and they stepped in to help. They were like training wheels on a bike. If I leaned too far to one side, they were there to correct me and to also teach me how to ride on my own someday. As a senior in high school, I can look back and easily identify the parents and teachers who understood my challenges and cared enough to help. Training on specific to fetal alcohol spectrum disorders or whatever disorders they are dealing with will help our educators understand our needs. Understanding leads to compassion. Compassion leads to action and support. At some point, every educator will teach someone with an FASD. Every para will help a student with FASD. It doesn't take much training at all to make a big difference in how they work with us. For those of us living with a disability, a positive experience in school can lead to a positive experience in life. Our early experiences in school can help to set the direction of our entire educational experience. Please support this legislation that will help give paraprofessionals the basic training that will make all the difference in our school experiences. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well done, Mr. Miller. Next.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. I'm Laura Block. I'm a board member at the Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, and I'm Alex's mom. You can imagine how proud I am of him. He's handsome, he's bright, he's charming, he's happy, he's engaging, he's a gifted athlete, and he's a loyal friend. You could spend a lot of time with Alex and not have any idea that he has a significant disability. Alex started receiving help from paras in the classroom in the third grade. Most, if not all, of the paras that he's worked with have been very caring people and wanted to do the best for him. Not all, however, understood the unique challenges that he faces having a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. For example, it's common with FASD for the corpus callosum in the center of the brain to be damaged. That's what connects the right side to the left side. And so what this means is that Alex may know the information, but the ability to transfer that and recall it on the day that he needs it, for example, a test day, it may not happen. When Alex was younger, we'd work on spelling words. We'd practice. He'd have them all down cold. Let him go play. He'd come back an hour later, and I'd say, let's just quick review these words. And it was like he'd never seen them before. That connection was lost. I knew the information was in there. I knew he knew these words. He just couldn't recall it. The odd thing was 6 weeks later, I'd find that same list and say, oh, hey, Alex, spell this word. It was right there. Alex's initial diagnosis was inattentive ADD. That's how his disability looks in the classroom. A para who doesn't know what I just told you about FASD may think that Alex is just distracted, may move him to a quiet corner of the room and continue to press him to come up with the information. That can create a lot of frustration for the para and for Alex. A common statement that he hears in the classroom many times a day from paras, from teachers, is, I know that you know this. While that may be true, knowing it and recalling it and accessing it are different things. A para who understands this unique challenge to FASD may choose instead to say, I know you've worked hard on this, let's just set it aside and come back and try again in an hour, or try again tomorrow. If Alex were deaf, no one would expect him to follow verbal directions without some kind of accommodation. Alex's disability, however, is largely invisible, and it's often misinterpreted as attitude or laziness, and I assure you that is not the case. Alex works harder than most of the students I know. A para without training may actually escalate his challenges without realizing it. When those connections are having a hard time being made, and then you add stress and frustration and pressure, and I want to perform and I want to please that para into the equation, it only makes it worse. A woman recently came to MOFAS frustrated over the same training issue. She is a para in northern Minnesota. She'd just gotten a new student with a physical disability and received training specific to that child's physical disability. She herself has a child with FASD. When she requested that same training opportunity for the para who works with her child, she was told that if the para wanted training, she'd have to get it on her own time. The training that we're asking for does not need to be cumbersome or expensive. Many of the organizations supporting this legislation are already providing no-cost or low-cost training, both in person and online. As a volunteer, I was at Minnetonka Middle School 2 weeks ago providing a 45-minute training on FASD as part of their teacher training in-service program. Last week, Alex and I spoke to a district-wide group of early childhood special needs educators. All of this was at no cost to the districts involved. We choose to do this because we know that even a little bit of training makes a world of difference in the classroom. I ask you to support this legislation for Alex and for all the kids who depend on the help from paras to get through their school experience. Thanks for this consideration.
Thank you very much, Ms. Blackman, sharing your story. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. This is something that is needed. It had huge bipartisan support in the House, and I'd sure like to have this passed and referred to possible inclusion into our omnibus bill.
Okay. We do have David Aaron listed for testifying and possibly others that I don't have.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I did not have that name in front of me, so I
okay.
apologize.
No,
for
we'll proceed and
the game.
Then open it up further. Welcome, Mr. Aaron.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Aaron. I am a staff attorney at Education Minnesota. I'm also a former special education teacher. I'll make my comments brief and just say that Education Minnesota wholeheartedly supports this legislation, and we want to thank Senator Hoffman for authoring it, and thank you, Alex, for testifying today. We often say that special education teachers are the most important people in students' lives, but that for students with disabilities, paraprofessionals are the most important people, or one of the most important people in students' lives. At Education Minnesota, we have the privilege of representing a large number of the special education paraprofessionals in this state, and our members often tell us that they are not receiving training or sometimes even knowledge of the disabilities of the students that they work with. In many cases, I've heard from paraprofessionals who don't even know the disability of the students that they work with before they begin the school year. Now, that's not true in every case. Some districts do an excellent job of providing training and making paraprofessionals aware, but those practices should be required across the state. So we wholeheartedly support this, and we believe that the training and time to receive information about each student's disability is crucial to help paraprofessionals fulfill the vital role that they play in the instruction of students with disabilities.
Thank you. Is there anyone else I'd like to address the committee? Ms. Kelleher. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we have, I hope it's just a wording change. If you look at the bottom of 2.30, if you read the language going forward, our concern is that this sets a really high bar for paraprofessionals immediately upon employment. where it says before, immediately upon employment, and then if you turn over, to really know the child's basic needs. And paraprofessionals, a lot like special ed teachers, are rare finds, and it might be nice to
excuse me, Ms. Kelleher, could you restate the line?
Okay, if you start at 230, okay. For all paraprofessionals employed to work in programs whose role in part is to provide direct support,
okay.
So then you go down to 1, before or immediately upon employment. And that immediate standard is a very high bar. Who's allowed to provide direct support to.
And Ms. Kelleher, that's current law in the sub.
But we added language.
Yes, in C.
Right. And I just want to make sure the bar in this bill is not too high for us to meet.
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you, Ms. Kelleher, for pointing that out. This doesn't change the scope. This just is very consistent with the original intent of 94-142 and highlight I want to look at. If you look at line 3.5 down to 3.7, that same language is used in federal law and has been since 1975. So we are now just being consistent with what we know we should be doing within the classroom. This is no cost. There's a bunch of information out there that are specific, and it's just once again highlighting that students with special education needs or related services needs must have folks that understand what their unique individualized needs are. I think it's just very a bill that gets us consistent with federal law, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Any additional remarks, Ms. Kelleher?
No, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. I can only share with what our attorney saw when he looked at it. So he was just concerned that standard was going to be really high around initial employment of paraprofessionals.
So it's noted for the record.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to address Senate File 1002? Questions of any of the testifiers or comments from committee members? Well done, Senator Hoffman, and Mr. Miller, we want to thank you again for sharing your testimony, your story, your courage, and we wish you the best.
Thank you.
It's all about you and others affected and doing a better job for being responsive to those needs and opportunities. Senator Hoffman, would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chair and members, I make a motion that this get laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Can that be for possible inclusion?
Possible inclusion. Well, I was trying to highlight you there. You know.
Okay. Further discussion? If not, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Thank you very much, Senator Hoffman. And for a schedule accommodation, we're going to go next to Senator Claussen, Senate File 1220. Then we'll go to Senator Bonoff's bill. Senator Claussen, Senate File 1220.
Good morning, Chairman Weger and committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 1220, requiring retired principals serving in a substitute role to be under continuing education licensure requirements. Senate File 1220 removes a provision in Minnesota Statute 2014, which exempts retired principals from continuing education requirements if they serve for no more than 15 consecutive days. Educators in Minnesota must renew their license every 5 years by demonstrating participation in continuing education professional development activities. This process promotes continuous improvement and the acquiring of new and relevant skills by school administrators. One example of the need for continuing education is the requirement recently enacted that school administrators receive information and training to build effective English learner strategies in their building. So requiring principals to go through the process brings them up to date with current statute changes. We have a couple people offering testimony today, Janet Moore, Executive Director, Minnesota Board of School Administrators, and Roger Arnson, Counsel for the Minnesota Elementary and Secondary Principals Associations.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Roger Arnson, Counsel for the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association. Actually, we brought this proposal to the legislature a few years back. The idea was to try to parallel up the school principal licensure with some short call substitute teacher licensure. After we got the bill passed, we found there were some significant implementation problems with that. And as the boards of the elementary and secondary organizations took a look at this, we actually thought it was a bad idea. And just as Senator Claussen told you, we do think that even short-term principals that are working in school districts need ongoing continuing education. And a few things that come to mind, just as Senator Hoffman mentioned, the EL language that we did last year, whether it's child abuse reporting, whether it's the new special ed restraint pieces, we really do think that this is important. It's a rather small deal, and it affected very few people, but we think this is the best change. So we strongly support this bill.
Thank you.
Chair Wieger, members of the committee, Senator Claussen, I'm Janet Moore, the Board of School Administrators Executive Director. I think the testimony has been well heard about the concerns that we have with this bill of exempting school administrators from continuing education units. The board has raised concerns about Minnesota Statute 122 A14 Subdivision 3 when the bill was enacted in 2012, felt that principals needed to be current in laws and practices and policies. Whether they sat in the seat or role of a principal for one day or many. We have too many instances where we have student safety concerns, educational laws that have been passed, where principals particularly need to be the lead and most concerned that the educational needs of our students are being met, whether they're a substitute or not. So we feel that everyone needs to stay current in the professional development. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Louise Sundin, and I am in my second term as a public member of the Minnesota Board of School Administrators, and I'd just like to thank you for being the fixers in this case. We appreciate it. And the previous testifiers have reiterated what the administrators on the board feel very strongly, which is the even short-term administrators in a building or in a district need to be up to speed on all the important changes that you made in the last session as examples they gave, and also should be up to speed on things like the young man who just testified on the previous bill and reactions to that. The final thing is that I'm glad that we could fix it, because the last 3 years Mr. Aronson and I have been at odds, and I want to be Mr. Aronson's friend again. So we kept saying, we can't do it, Roger. It's not legal. And he kept saying, just do it. So we're going to be glad to be on the same side again. Thank you.
Oh, nice. Okay. We do have one additional testifier who asked for that opportunity, Rick Heller. And if there's anyone else, please join Senator Claussen at the table. Welcome, Mr. Heller, on Senate File 1220.
Thank you, Chair, and members, for this opportunity to speak on your bill. I specifically have a handout. I think it would zero in on this, that would be helpful. It comes from the legislature. It comes from the Board of Teaching, talks about the Minnesota waiver. Would you allow me to provide those handouts?
Yes, the page is getting.
Okay.
The handout currently, I spoke over at the the People's House, I believe it was a week or two ago, and I had some concerns or perhaps some great encouragement to hear that they're moving up the bar for principals. With my experience with principals, at times didn't know who the twice exceptional were, nor did they know about universal design, which is also found in the Mendelsohn waiver. Now, if I can walk you through this document, and then you can follow me as I talk, I'll try to do that most effectively. I've provided names of who's on the bills, both the House and Senate. Well, if you go to the second page, and the Minnesota waiver is identified with a number. If you put that number in the Minnesota search engine, you'll find this document as part of the Minnesota waiver. It's document 053215. Its page is 41 and 40 and 41. Okay, so it's my understanding as we continue to improve principals' effectiveness, I think it's very relevant as we look at, if we go to page 205 marked, and I had marked that's from the Minnesota Department of Education, and I had circled the, we go down to the second one, I had circled letter of assurance. School districts, it's a letter of assurance, school districts insurance, and I had highlighted enhanced principal leadership skills. And I had heard over at the legislature it's a 5-year process, so will teachers be effective principals if you bring them back? Are they ready to be in the setting? If you go to the yellow sheet, the very back one, three of five, I marked anyways on the back side. Most important under item, which is, I guess, statute 123B 147 under principals. I believe this was added under subdivision 3, item B. They underlined some certain areas there. It says diverse populations, including risk students, children with disabilities, English language learners, and gifted students among. And then it has a must. So this question is, where's the twice exceptional? We currently have that in our statute. And I don't know who they really are. And I think if we're going to really move the bar up based on the second and third page or face pages, that we need to make sure that when they come back, that they're at least trained at the academies, so they're ready to go, because it's essential not only that they know about universal design and a twice exceptional. However, when they're going to, that could impact the student's performance, especially they may not be evaluating, but if the original principal isn't there, yet they've been trained, it doesn't seem like a level playing field. My suggestion is if anyone's willing to entrain amendment, that at least even though it's a 5-year plan for principals to get ready, I mean, we're bringing them back in as a leader, and I think it's just that maybe you could just move the bar up just a little bit, at least close the window from a 5 to a 2-year. That way we're going to have more effective principals in our classroom.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Senator Claussen, I know you're a strong advocate of the academy, and if there were sufficient funds, that'd be very laudable to have everyone enroll if that was possible. Feedback for Mr. Heller's comments.
Yes, thank you, Senator Wieger. Well, the proposal in Senate File 1220 is consistent with current teacher licensing and administrative licensing laws that requires a 5-year renewal. And so a retired principal who after a year or 2 years is called upon to serve in a position, they have to have a current license. That license needs to be current, up to date. They'll need to renew it within 5 years, so it's very consistent with current law regarding administrative licensure. It would be nice if we could have every principal go through the academy for training. Funding does not allow that. We have a lot of we have a proposal to extend funding for the academy, and the substitute principals are generally serving for short periods of time. They need to have a current license, and they need to renew that license every 5 years. So I think that was the purpose of Senate File 1220, to make sure that it is occurring.
Thank you, Senator Claussen. Questions of Senator Claussen or of any of the testifiers?
If I may speak, Chair. Permission,
yes, Mr. Hall.
You know, if twice exceptional in there, how are we assured that
that these even the current principals understand the sensitivity of these individual learners. We have standalone language, you know, currently in the rules. However, when it comes right down to it, if these kids are underrepresented, is the academies making assurances at least that that people are aware of who these individuals are? And frankly, are we violating a waiver when it comes to moving the bar up? And I think that's really, we need to be engaged with the waiver. The waiver is our roadmap. And as we make laws here, I hope that we all really engage and understand that waiver. I believe 2013 it was made fully accessible thanks to the Department of Education. So now we have an opportunity for those that may be on cognitive overload when it comes to reading content can be engaged and have it read out loud to them. So my suggestion is, as all you leaders are well aware of the waiver, let's reflect into the waiver as we continue to make these bills, including these academy. Again, I'll ask again, does the academy provide twice exceptional training for the principals, the current principals? A simple question. I'd appreciate it. Someone could forward that question, Chair, if they would yield to that.
Senator Wicker. Senator Clausen. Thank you, Senator Wicker. This is not a waiver. These principals that are taking these positions must be licensed. So this is not any type of a waiver system. They have to be licensed as any other active principal in the state of Minnesota. Certainly, the requirement that they do renew the license and go through continuing training addresses some of the concerns that our speaker has just mentioned, making sure they're up to date on current law, current practices. That's what this Senate File 1220 is all about, making sure principals are current.
Secretary.
One more thing, Chair, if the Board of Teaching could yield, perhaps, since they're the ones that...
Excuse me. I believe Mr. Heller, Senator Kiffmeyer has a question.
Oh. No, Mr. Chair, I just happened to...
Oh. Thank you. Okay. One more question, Mr. Heller.
If the Board of Teaching could yield to the question, Board, with your permission to answer the question...
Ms. Maher?
I believe they're
brief
here.
Brief response, and again, this is not a waiver, but respectfully, Ms. Maher?
I represent the Board of School Administrators. I do not represent the Board of Teaching.
Or, excuse me, Ms. Sundin? When you're representing, that's the... Is the Board of Teaching, I believe, is here on the next issue, but I'm going to ask that there be some offline discussion on that with you. We're just looking at the requirement now on continuing education that it would apply to retired principals, but we'll get a brief comment and then we're going to move ahead.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. Respectfully, I'm going to ask that the question be clarified before I provide response.
Mr. Heller.
If I could clarify it right now, twice exceptional to get the statute, and maybe the legislature can answer that question better since they put it in there. However, since twice exceptional now is in statute, and I believe perhaps the Board of Teaching may know who they are, and I think, the clarification of the question, since they were involved in a process regarding SONAR or making the rules, did this discussion come up on the twice exceptional, or why do they have a firewall or between disabled and then gifted and not put twice exceptional when I believe they had the bill or passed it, they had twice exceptional into the Minnesota statute?
Okay. Brief response.
I'll provide the introduction. My name is Erin Doan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Teaching. At this time, Mr. Heller and I have exchanged discussion somewhat about this issue. The board has no intention of opening rulemaking to look at teacher licensure in the areas of special education, as we just did that in 2012. But certainly we would continue to engage in discussion with Mr. Heller going forward. And if there is a connection to an area where we can provide assistance to the department in any of their work in this area, certainly we would be happy to do that.
Okay, and we appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Clausen will entertain a motion.
Yes, Senator Wicker, I move that Senate File 1220 be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. And Senator Rosen, we know you're here. Senator Bonner is next, and we will get to you right after that. So, Senator Bonhoff, Senate File 472. And we would invite any testifiers to join her.
Mr. Chair, members, I do have an amendment. I have the A5 amendment.
Okay, has that been distributed?
I would think so. Mm-hmm. Oh, nope. It's coming now, I guess.
Okay. I want to make sure members see it before we act. As a courtesy, it will be adopted. If you'd like to highlight
sure.
that as it's being distributed, then we'll adopt it.
So this is not the bill's first stop, but after it left one committee, we have gotten some feedback, particularly from the school counselors. And so the amendment just addresses that feedback. We have changed the word in this bill, counseling to advising, counselors to advisors, inserted workforce advisors are intended to support and augment school counselors. Responding to a concern, counselors want to make sure this bill was not in any way trying to replace them. And then for consistency, added a phrase after youth ages 14 to 21, so it was consistent. And I'll go through the whole bill, but just wanted you to know it was in the amendment.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that this is not the first stop. Is it deemed controversial, the amendment?
No, it's clarifying.
Okay. On the A5 amendment, all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Adopted. We have Senate File 472 as amended. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And this bill actually parallels a bill that Senator Saxhog is carrying. And Senator Saxhog's bill was not referred to education. So I want members to know that this bill might actually disappear because it may be folded into Senator Saxhog's bill. But yet I wanted to take this opportunity since I had a hearing scheduled so that the members of this committee understood what our intention was, because we think it really does have broad and positive implications for the education community. So as we all know, Minnesota has a very strong disconnect between our education and our workforce systems, as well as having a severe counselor shortage. We do have wonderful tools to allow young people to access information around workforce center or workforce goals, but we don't often make sure that that information is getting into the actual schools and the students themselves. And so a couple years ago, we passed a law that allowed for a pilot where the workforce centers went into four different school districts to augment what the counselors were doing. They provided services around career, around high-demand jobs. They provided counseling. They did group sessions. That was so successful that, in fact, the rest of the state wanted to be able to have that opportunity. So what this bill does is it requires workforce councils in each workforce service area to work with local school districts to assist high school students in selecting careers of interest. It requires the workforce council to provide information on the strategic high growth and in-demand occupations and industries, including what the salary profiles are, the necessary credentials and training desired by employers. It then says that the workforce councils should be given support and assistance by the schools themselves. They should get some space at the schools, access to assemblies and other career exploration activities, access to teachers, and ability to work with students after testing and advising. There's a formula established to make sure there's geographic parity with regard to this initiative, making sure that both the greater Minnesota and the urban areas are able to access this kind of information. And it would require each local workforce center that provides these services do a report to the Commissioner of Deed that would show
how many students were counseled, the number of students enrolling in a post-secondary institution following graduation, and other information requested by the commissioner. One of the differences between this bill and the bill that Senator Saxhog is carrying is Senator Saxhog has also included a workforce center coordinator in each of these areas so that there could be a more seamless integration between the workforce centers, the Minnesota Youth Project, and the school districts. One of the concerns we heard from the counselors, which is why you've got the amendment before you, is they were, you know, given the tremendous shortage, they did not want in any way to have this bill signal that they had enough help. And so we wanted to make sure that that this is distinguished, that these are, in fact, career exploration advisors really intended to augment what our counselors are doing.
Great. Thank you, Sarah Bonner. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Ann Kilzer. I'm the director of the Workforce Council Association, which is the organization that represents all 16 workforce service areas across the state, including the workforce investment boards that oversee the strategic delivery of the services in each of our workforce centers. Employers throughout the state are looking for short and long-term solutions to needs for employees. Minnesota needs all hands on deck to fill positions that will be left vacant by the droves of impending retirements and to meet the needs, the demands of our evolving economy. Unfortunately, many young people aren't getting accurate or up-to-date career information, don't have access to career mentors or other employment services, and may not be aware of job opportunities in their communities. Connecting youth to careers and corresponding additional education is a priority of the workforce development system, as it is essential to the future economy of our state. And you understand this. As Senator Boneff mentioned, in 2013, the legislature passed the world's best workforce legislation, which, among other things, requires school districts to assist all students by no later than ninth grade to explore college and career interest aspirations and to develop a transition plan to post-secondary education or employment. As we are well aware, however, the demands on Minnesota's public high school counselors are intense, with our average student-to-counselor ratios being higher than most states. But there is help to be found by levering resources. As Senator Bonoff mentioned, also in 2013, the legislature provided funding for four of six Minnesota's 16 workforce service areas to partner with local school districts to complement the work of school counselors by providing school staff, students, and families with the most current and post-secondary education information available. It's imperative to note that we understand and respect the work that the counselors are doing with students in schools, and the intention is not to replace, duplicate, or impede that work. The intention is for the youth counselors from the workforce centers, another publicly funded system, who already have expertise and resources in regard to youth career advising and planning, to help where they can. I've provided a report on these pilot projects, and the results have been impressive. So far, the four sites, which are located in Northeast Minnesota, Stearns Benton, Rural Minnesota SEP, and
Hennepin-Carver,
thank you, of course, have served 1,516 youth through individualized services and 6,495 through group activities by leveraging existing staff knowledge and resources. As you'll see from a quote on the bottom of page 3 of the report, is our experience that school counselors are very happy to have this assistance from partners in the public workforce system. The legislation Senator Bonoff is putting before you today would allow for these partnerships to be implemented in all 16 workforce service areas of the state. All of our members are very excited about these potential partnerships and more than willing and ready to provide these services. We strongly appreciate your support for this initiative, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Bonhoff, looks like a very interesting proposal, and reading through the material here. One question I do have for you, though, is on page 2, where all the funds are distributed. I was expecting, when I was reading that, to see that they would be just allocated statewide because of workforce centers and all that. But here there's a division of how they're distributed. So for my district, this is not really good news in subdivision 3. So maybe there's something that I don't have a total understanding about, but I would, you know, for my district, they see this as, why not just every student, like your line says, allocated based on the county share of population ages 14 to 21. It seems like that sentence would be alone would be very helpful.
Sure. Mr. Chair, and Senator Kiffmeyer, I'll let Ms. Kilzer address that, as that was their recommended formula.
Ms. Kilzer.
Mr. Chair and members, the formula that the allocation is based on is the existing Minnesota Youth Program formula, which is the employment service program that is delivered through the Workforce Centers for Youth. So this isn't saying which youth would be able to be served. They're the factors that the formula is based upon, so that the funding would go out to all 16 service areas based on a formula rather than an allocation that would divide the resources equally among the 16 areas, so that it's taking into account the number of youth in the area as well as the relative poverty in the area.
And question for Ms. Kiffmeyer, or Senator Kiffmeyer.
Right, Mr. Chair. And I can understand why you might use from something else, but for me, I don't know. I think that's a different sort of program that may be appropriate for that. But I think in this sort of a situation, we're just talking about career, technical, you know, moving forward, I don't know that that's applicable here. So just my comment and thought, Mr. Chair.
Question. So,
yes, Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, what about this formula makes you conclude that your school district wouldn't be as well served?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Well, it's more on a general principle. We've seen this in education funding a lot. And that instead of every student a student and the dollars going out on a basis, there's been a presumption that somehow the youth in our district have a same similar needs, especially in this career technical area. So, but I've seen this a lot, and so we always end up, I think because we don't have some, like on compensatory, the concentration. So we have Elk River, that's a large school district. We have a mixture, but it's diluted because they aren't concentrated. So I just find that it's more of a, in general, having funding go to all the students, divided up by student, and not dividing it up in this sort of a way.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, this portion, Ms. Kilzer is reminding me, the way this formula is structured, a greater portion goes to greater Minnesota than the urban core, and you kind of represent that ex-urban area. So sometimes in those formulas, I agree, that does get left out. So I think it's worth considering, and I appreciate the comment.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Pratt, Weber, and Saxhawk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoff, I'm concerned about line 1.17. Talking about providing relevant information about the student to the local workforce council. And my question there is really twofold. What is relevant information, and don't we have a concern with sharing student data outside of the schools? Typically, we only allow directory information to be shared. And so could you address that and what you're thinking of, and if we do have any data practice concerns?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, it says relevant information about the student to the local workforce council regarding vocational exploration the student has received. So it doesn't say specific student data. It says regarding vocational exploration the student has received, so that the workforce centers, as they come into the school districts, want to make sure that the information they're giving these students is appropriate to what the students are interested in the world's best workforce language. They go through that career exploration, and they put together a workforce plan. And so you want to make sure that there's communication between the two. And in the four pilots, there has not been any concern around that. In fact, the counselors have welcomed it. And the control aspect of this portion lies with the counselor, because they can determine what relevant is, and certainly they're trained not to give information that would violate data practices.
Follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoff, as this has been piloted, there hasn't been any sharing of test results, any sharing of learning disabilities or anything along that line?
No.
Okay, thank you.
The answer was no, for the record. Thank you. Yes, Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Senator Bonhoff for being willing to work with Senator Kiffmeyer on her issue. I think as part of the Rural Task Force and working with Senator Saxhog and others in putting together our workforce bill that that's going through the legislature right now, I think we recognize that the needs that we have, particularly in greater Minnesota, are pretty universal in terms of the making our youth aware of the job opportunities that are there. And it isn't a function or it isn't a problem that's just accruing to economically disadvantaged youth, but basically all youth. And so I appreciate your willingness to work that out.
Thank you.
Senator Saxon.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Bonner, for bringing this to this committee. I think you and Senator Weber referred to greater Minnesota. I still refer to the area of emphasis here is rural Minnesota, rural schools. And the reason I do is because I think that we found in our workforce training, which in rural Minnesota seems to be our biggest economic development hurdle, is that the small rural school is just, as I said, they tend to be smaller, they tend to be more isolated, and we in rural Minnesota tend to have the problem of out-migration. In other words, rural Minnesota kids, if they don't get the right information, tend to head for the metropolitan area, and we need the kids out there. So this whole coordinator counseling emphasis is very important, we certainly thank the people who put together those pilot programs, because those were very helpful in showing us the way.
Next, we have Senators Clausen and Kent. I do see Professor Walter Roberts in the audience. If he would like to share comments at some point, I extend the invitation, but otherwise I wanted to acknowledge your presence. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoff, when we heard this in higher ed, I raised this issue, and I want to clarify it again. My concern is similar. It's not similar, but it has to do with subsection 2, line 1.17 that Senator Pratt had brought up earlier. My concern is the sharing of information is kind of a one-way street. The workforce centers are going to be looking at career exploration, investigation. Workforce advisors take on that role. School counselors, on the other hand, will do academic advisors. They'll be planning, you know, what is that pathway courses that need to be taken for that student to achieve that eventual outcome for their life's work. So I think somewhere there needs to be very clear that the workforce centers need to share that information back with the school counselors so that then they can develop the academic plan to go along with that career plan.
Ms. Kilzer, do you have a response?
Mr. Chair and members, I think that in the pilot projects, what we've seen so far is often the school counselors are the point of contact that the job advisors are working with. So that information is going back and forth. They're also trying to understand as well exactly which courses are offered in the different schools so that they can help make those connections. I think the intention is for that to all come together. Rather than having it go off on two separate paths, particularly connecting with the world's best workforce legislation and knowing that those career plans have to be in place by ninth grade, the intention is to help with that and make sure that the information is getting to the students in the way that's most helpful to them.
Senator Clausen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think just to be clear, I think that needs to be in statute, so it's clarifying that the roles and how that coordination is going to be taking place. Thank you.
Senator Bonhoff,
Mr. Chair, Senator Clausen, this is just a suggestion off the top of my head. If we added a number 4 at the bottom of page 1, something like workforce center advisors will coordinate with school counselors to ensure alignment between academic and career goals.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, I think that'd be very appropriate. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Arneson, this would...
Senator Bonhoff moves to amend Senate File 472 as follows. At after line 1.23, insert, and then I'll ask Mr. Arneson to,
Sure,
if you want to restate what you said.
I can restate that, Mr. Chair. It'd be a number four paren. Workforce center advisors will coordinate with school counselors to ensure alignment between academic and career goals.
Very good. Okay. Further discussion on the amendment? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And very briefly, because we did hear this in higher ed, as you know, I've been working on the issue of counselors extensively, and I really appreciate the emphasis on the teamwork here, and I think the amendment does take that a little bit further, which I think is great. So thank you all for your efforts in this very, very important aspect of our kids' futures. One thing I did want to say in response to Senator Pratt's comments regarding data practices is just the reminder that because the workforce councils are contracting with the local school districts, all the traditional data practices rules under FERPA and state data practices rules regarding students would apply. It's always very important to remind everybody how important those are. So thank you for that, but it would cover it. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to address Senate File 472? Further comments, questions? We have Senate File 472 as amended. Senator Bonoff, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I move that Senate File 472 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to Finance.
On that motion, further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion adopted. Thank you very much, Senator Bonoff. And
thank you, Anna. I know Senator Rosen's right behind me, and I do want to thank Senator Rosen for being a co-author on this bill.
And that's noted. Thank you. Okay. Next, we have Senator Rosen, Senate File 475, and thank you for your patience. And we'd ask Ms. Stone to join. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members.
Good morning.
It's very nice to be in front of your committee. I have Senate File 475, which is part of the legislative priorities for the Minnesota Board of Teaching, their 2015 agenda. Under current law right now, the Board of Teaching can revoke a teacher's license to teach without the right to a hearing upon receiving a certified copy of a conviction. And then from that point, that is listed in state law right now. And then from that point, it goes on to list the various offenses. Senate File 475 would amend the Section 122A.20, Subdivision 1, to include sex trafficking in the first degree of a minor. And then the other actions that are predatory in nature, such as engaging in hiring or agreeing to hire a minor to engage in prostitution, solicitation of children to engage in sexual conduct, communication of sexually explicit materials to children, also interference with privacy of a minor victim, also trafficking of a minor victim, and any violation which requires registrations as an offense under Section 243.66. So with that, Mr. Chair, it's a very common sense bill, I believe, and I'd like to thank you for being a co-author on it. And I do have Ms. Eric Stone from the Board of Teaching.
Thank you, Senator Rosen and Ms. Stone.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senators. My name is Erin Doan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Teaching. As Senator Rosen said, this was part of our legislative agenda for this year. Board members are putting this language forward and suggesting that this is a good change for a number of reasons. One, I think most of us could agree that having to register as a predatory sex offender is probably not the first criteria for teachers in our classrooms. We would like to see that those individuals are not able to continue to receive a Minnesota teaching license. Beyond that, I think the piece that I'd like to reinforce for all of you is that when the Board of Teaching or the Board of School Administrators revokes a license, they are saved from having to go through the administrative process of contested case hearing to remove a license. Those contested case hearings do have a price tag that varies. Those hearings can cost anywhere from $1,000 up to $10,000, depending on the degree of litigation. So at this point, I thank you for your consideration, and certainly would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address Senate File 475? Anyone in the audience? If not, well prepared, and I believe we'll entertain a motion to have Senate File 475 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Senator Kent, would you make that motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I so move.
On that motion, further discussion or comments? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Kent and members. Okay.
Next, Senator Pratt, Senate File 740. And if there are any additional amendments or handouts, again, we remind authors to please make those available if you can to help us proceed. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wow, we're clicking along today pretty well.
Good sign.
thank you, Senator Chamberlain. Thank you. Mr. Chair, first I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
Okay, members, I don't have the A2 amendment, so as soon as it's distributed, we will
sure.
act on it.
I think it was just, I think the final version, the final edits were made just this morning, so.
Again, members, this is an author's amendment. This is the first stop, and it reflects how Senator Pratt would like to have the bill. And
I move the A2 amendment to put it in the format that I'd like.
Okay, and just so everyone is not surprised, I want to make sure they all see it first. And I know you would never do anything other than to have a bill reflecting what you wanted there. Okay.
I promise not to be sneaky.
On the author's amendment, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We have Senate File 475 as amended. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last session, the legislature directed the Department of Education to customize a streamlined, user-friendly statewide system for required.
Excuse me, I said 475, 740.
I knew what you meant.
Okay, thank you.
For the record.
The legislature directed the Department of Education to customize a user-friendly statewide system for required reporting on special education students. While the objectives and rationale for developing a system were well-intentioned, there are third-party providers that sell systems that essentially do what the law instructs the Department of Education to do. Meanwhile, local school districts have already adopted and integrated compliance systems that meet state and federal requirements and have been adapted to address their local concerns. Now, I recognize the need to be able to transfer student records from a student's home district to another district, a co-op, or to the Department of Education. I am concerned, though, with the provision that every school district be converted to the new statewide system by the 2018-19 school year. The proper role of the legislature and MDE is not to manage which system serves students, rather to establish policies and guidelines so that local districts can manage how students can best be served. 740, as amended, modifies the existing law in two ways. First, it removes the mandatory use of a statewide system, but allows the Department of Education to continue development of a system that can be made available to local districts. The system defined has several objectives that must be met, and local districts can choose to adopt the Department of Education system when it has proven its capabilities, and a local district decides that a conversion is the best option. Second, it establishes that any vendor must be able to report and accept a common format by the 2018-19 school year, which will allow for a seamless transition of records between special ed entities. Mr. Chair, with the amendment, I believe this bill is a compromise between those who advocated for a common system and for those who believe that in the right of independent school districts and that they should be making these management decisions. So with me, I have Ms. Schaller and Mr. Kermes to speak on behalf.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chairman Wieger and members. My name is Darren Kermes. I'm the Executive Director of the Southwest Metro Educational Cooperative. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of Senate File 740 as amended. This bill strengthens a key aspect of Minnesota Statute 125A.085 in that it, as Senator Pratt mentioned, it adds the portability and file transfer pieces that the Department of Education has already been supporting and that I believe is essential to actually helping with some paperwork and work reduction for our teachers and staff. The amendment also allows the new online system to be piloted and then implemented if it fulfills the paperwork reduction promises while also protecting the rights of students and meeting federal standards. All standards in the legislation passed last year are retained, save the implementation date. I think that's critical to understand with this. This does not repeal the old standard. It simply takes the mandatory implementation out. I think this is a very reasonable compromise that strengthens the current law. Last session, Minnesota Statute 125A.085 became law. The purpose was commendable, paperwork reduction. Superintendents, special education directors, all administrators share this common goal brought forward largely by teacher leaders. I had some concerns with that bill, but I see some very positive aspects of that law as well. I've been a school administrator both in local school districts and the Department of Education for 25 years. I don't believe that this bill or that the law is going to reduce paperwork greatly. However, I think it's worthwhile to give it a chance. MDE has already, and a task force, have already put in a significant amount of time moving forward with an RFP, designing the system. Let's let it have a shot. Let's let it run its course as the law allows and pilot it for a couple of years. If this system is as good as advertised, you're not going to need a state mandate because districts will move to it. I will give you an example. North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale School District, a new special education director, Corey McIntyre, came in. He looked at the existing system, and he is implementing a new system for that district. It happens to be a Minnesota system that's used by 80% of the districts in the state of Minnesota. So he's already making that choice. If this new system is that good, districts will use it even without a mandate. And if there are stragglers, I would suggest that the ideal time is to come in at that point and say, everybody shifted to it, this is good, let's move forward. Mm-hmm. The original three concerns that I had, one involved data privacy. I would like to commend the work of Darren Cordy and MDE. I've often been critical of some of the things done by MDE, but they have really worked hard to address this. They will not be housing the data, which was a major concern, and they have vetted this through OSEP. So that has eliminated one of the major concerns I had with the original statute. Second concern I had was portability. Senator Pratt's bill addresses the portability issue. So this would strengthen an already strong piece that's in the law. There's a third part that the department is also addressing through Mr. Cordy through a Q&A document that the department put out, and that involves parent access. I think that's solid, but again, let's move it forward. What that basically means is I have a daughter who's a junior at Burnsville, go Blaze, and she is all of her system, all of her information is online so that I know if she's tardy for a class. It shows up in my email. If my daughter had a disability, I don't have access to that information. As a parent, having that online access, if I wanted to access it, just like a parent being able to access grades and schedules and everything else, is a strength. And I applaud the work, again, of the department that they've put that in, that that will be part of the new system. If that moves forward, I think that's a second piece down the road. So in closing, I would just like to thank Senator Pratt for bringing this forward. I think this is a very reasonable compromise. I think it strengthens the current law. It retains local control by taking away a mandatory date, which again I would suggest if this system is as good as advertised, won't be needed because districts will move to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kermes. Welcome.
Hello. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing my testimony today. My name is Melissa Shaler, and I'm the Director of Special Education for Intermediate School District 917, and I'm also representing the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education today. There's just two issues that I want to highlight, and the first really is about the mandating the use of a statewide electronic due process system, and currently that is set for 18-19 without this amendment. And I think while many of our concerns have been addressed by the Minnesota Department of Education, there continue to be concerns about mandating the use of a due process system. We appreciate the many benefits of the system, but we really feel the system should be the choice of districts to implement. Among the reasons for this include the ability of district systems to interface most efficiently with local district student management systems. Another reason is the costs of such implementation. Cost to districts will come through training that will be necessary for successful implementation. Currently, there are more than 15,000 licensed staff statewide that will need to undergo training in addition to other staff not licensed by MDE, including audiologists, occupational therapists, physical therapists, paraprofessionals, and administrative support staff. The cost of training and the time necessary to complete training will take away from other initiatives and necessary trainings at a time when districts' resources need to be utilized in the most efficient manner possible. Further, districts have tailored their due process systems in concert with their providers to meet requirements imposed through compliance monitoring, complaints, and due process hearings with the MDE. These are not requirements articulated in statute or rule, but rather standard by which districts are being measured and thus need vehicles in which to demonstrate their compliance. One of these vehicles that is a common place use in some of our due process systems is note-taking. We've been told that we need to document in writing the decisions that have been made and the actions that are being taken, and so that is a piece that has been added and is often required locally. And we do that to protect ourselves when we have to move through some of the due process compliance issues that we face. The second issue, I think, that I want to talk about is the issue of portability. And I think a requirement of portability of due process records through our electronic systems creates efficiencies that will dramatically impact the field of special education. Mandating portability by the 18-19 school year should be an expectation of not only the statewide system, but also the other systems available for districts to use to meet their due process requirements. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I welcome any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several questions with regard to this bill, and so I may need to ask Mr. Corti as well, but I'm concerned about the moving away from a universal system because of the cost implications. I've been somebody who's been a strong proponent of a shared service platform, particularly when it comes to IT, as I see that there's a great benefit in terms of potential cost savings and efficiency. And so I'm concerned that this bill, under the guise of local control, opens a door for multiple electronic systems, which, you know, I have often likened it to imagine if you had like a Best Buy or a Target and their branch stores, under the guise of local control, were able to pick which electronic system they were going to use. And so I'm curious also if Minute has weighed in on this and if Minute is at all involved in this. It looks to me like the bill allows for local control with the use of that. And so I have questions about that. But then I'm confused by Ms. Schaller's comments with regard to due process systems training costs, because it seems to me this bill does not augment or require additional things to be done that aren't already in law. It sounds like this is more an interoperability proposal. So if it's also adding a specific component of special ed requirements I want to know exactly what that is, Senator Pratt, because I didn't get that from reading it. And then I also want to just confirm that the repealer is, in fact, just repealing the date by which everybody has to be interoperable. So those are a few different questions.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. I think I'll address the last point first. We've stricken the repealer, and originally the thought was that the state shouldn't be involved in developing a system. However, after meeting with the special ed directors and based on testimony in the other body, we felt this was a way of doing that. And so if you look at line 2.10, it simply says that for the 2015-16 school year, that school districts may use an online system or may contract with an outside vendor for compliance, and then we strip the mandatory conversion in 18-19. As far as cost, I'll let the special ed directors talk to that, but that was actually a conversation we had on Friday when we worked through this amendment. So,
sure. So currently,
Michelle.
Thank you. Currently, in the state of Minnesota, we use electronic due process systems. This is my 20th year, 11th year as a director of special education, and I have always used some type of online system to complete my due process paperwork. This is not new. What was being mandated in this Senate File 740 and the previous last year is the use of a statewide, so the state choosing that system for us. So districts currently choose their due process system, the electronic system they use, just as they choose a student information system to keep track of things like grades and attendance and those sorts of things. So what this effectively did was say, now we need to have a statewide system, a unified system for that. In terms of training, it's the cost of training people not on new requirements, but how to use a new system. So we've used the same system in my district, I would venture to say, since we've adopted it, so probably pretty close to 25 years. And so to bring in something new, I would have to provide training to my teachers on things simply how to access those forms, how to complete those forms as they are laid out because they will be different. And those sorts of things. So it's not training them on new requirements. It's training them on a new system and how to use a new procedure kind of system.
And thank you. Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, was Mr. Corte going to address this bill? Thank you.
Yes. Mr. Corte.
Mr. Chair, members, Darren Cordy, I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill. Would also like to thank Senator Pratt for his amendment and the special ed administrators for working with us on this proposal. We do appreciate removing the repealer language that was in there. As was mentioned by Mr. Kermes, this is kind of a process that we've just completed going through the RFP process and getting a contract in place. As you know, the language directing us to start this process was just passed 8 months ago, so we're still very early on in the process. And just last week, actually, we did select a vendor. It's a company out of Georgia called Accent, and they operate a due process system that they call Enrich that is used statewide in two states. It's Colorado and South Carolina. In South Carolina, actually, the system is statewide, and it's mandatory to use. In Colorado, it's a voluntary system that about 70% of special ed students are covered by in that state. So they have experience with either way. We and the commissioner do support making the system voluntary. I think that our hope is that we've selected a good product here and that as we continue to roll it out and bring it to districts to pilot and receive feedback from them on how the system's working and ways that we can improve it, that we're really going to have a good product that districts want to use and that we're not going to be required to have a mandate for. And the commissioner, being a former superintendent, understands the local control arguments that are being made out there. There was some talk about paperwork reduction. I think that we agree that there's not a system that we can build that's going to reduce the requirements of paperwork that are in state and federal law. That's not going to happen through a system. But what we're hoping happens through a system is that we're any locally required documentation or vendor-provided documentation that's on top of what is required by state and federal law, that wouldn't be required by this system. So in that sense, we're hoping that we'll see some small paperwork or modest paperwork reductions. And then also through the automation of certain processes, we're hoping to see some reductions as well. The Q&A that Mr. Kermes mentioned, I did bring copies of that, if the page would like to distribute those. I'm sorry I didn't get them out to you before the hearing today, but that has some more kind of detailed information about some of the concerns that were out there. And to answer Senator Bonnoff's question, yes, Minute has been involved in this. And in fact, they're actually going to be the entity that's negotiating this contract on our behalf as the state's IT provider. Thank you. So certainly they have been involved in those conversations and will continue to be. If I could just touch on the training component as well, after our hearing in the other body, I did go back to our vendor, our IT folks, and ask about that. They said it would be something that would be negotiated out through the contract. So now that we've selected a vendor, we start the contract negotiation process. And so our hope is that the vendor will be providing that training as part of the state contract, but can't make any promises on that point. And then the other point is just that the funding on this was one time; it's not ongoing. So in the future, if there was going to be some ask by the state or by the vendor to provide that training for districts, then we probably have to just talk about how that would be funded.
Final comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that information. I appreciate it. I would just continue to urge an analysis of cost savings by having one system versus disparate, and say that, yeah, local control is an important and valued principle, but we are accountable for all the taxpayer dollars, and so if it's more cost effective to have one system, then I would hope we would ultimately do that. Thank you.
Senators Jensen, Dahl, and Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chair, just real quick.
Senator Pratt.
Just to Senator Bonnoff, I think what we're trying to recognize as well, Senator Bonnoff, is there is a cost of conversion and a cost of training as well, that local districts, not only in monetary resources, but as well in time. One of the things that Ms. Schaller talked about the other day was that so many of her routines she's used to. And a new system will cause that time to increase significantly as she learns the new process, which could take months of work in order to get through. And I think the other piece, I forgot the other piece. Oh, my gosh. We'll get back.
Sarah Jensen.
We'll get back on it, yeah.
Sarah Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Schaller, did I understand you correctly that 80% of the schools utilize the system that you're currently using?
Schaller? Not the system I'm currently using.
Okay.
There is a system that's used in the state of Minnesota that about 80% of the districts use. However, I wouldn't say 80% of the population of the state uses that system. The four largest school districts in the state, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Okehennepin, and 196, they all use separate different systems. But outstate Minnesota does use, in large part, the same system.
So, Mr. Chair,
Jensen.
So I am concerned that we are putting extra cost onto those local school districts. If we're talking about school districts that have chosen that system, it's not like we're getting a hodgepodge of a lot of different systems that are currently out there, and that maybe we need to take a look at providing some assistance if we're going to do a state-mandated system, that 80% of the school districts, not by number of students, but by number of districts, is utilizing currently, that will have to switch. I hope we take that into consideration, too.
Yes. Senator Pratt.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Jensen, as well as I remember my follow-up to Senator Bonnoff, is the amendment also puts the responsibility on any system that wants to do business in the state of Minnesota, the ability to provide output in a common format. and so that we can have the efficient and effective transfer of records beyond. So that's not a cost to the state. That's a cost to the current vendors.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I'm agreeing with a lot of the comments that have been made today. Senator Bonhoeff shares some of my concerns. I'm glad to hear Mr. Kermes say that we want to strengthen the 2014 statute that was passed. I think that there can't be some assumption that what was happening before 2014 was really good in terms of special ed paperwork. Also, I think Mr. Cordy also kind of alleviated some of my concerns that I know a lot of local districts are doing a lot more than needed in terms of state and federal requirements. So by having the one system, I think that's a positive thing. And finally, talk about training to convert. I think part of last year's law was let's get folks in college and universities that are going into the special education field on board with one system that they can get into the field and they're understanding the field without having to be trained, or if they move somewhere else, retrained in another system, or moving somewhere else in another system. So I think for all the reasons that have been mentioned and all the positive things and the objectives of the 2014 law with portability and for training and for, we think, cost savings, that's what's behind the law. So let's do what we can, not to eliminate it, but to strengthen it. And if this bill, Senator Pratt, actually strengthens the law and gives some more time to get there, then I think we're moving in the right direction. But let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's get this right long term, because it's not going to go away. Thank you.
Senator Kiffmeyer, followed by Senator Wicklund. But Senator Pratt, did you want to respond?
No, I agree with Senator Dahl, and that's why we took out the repealer and allow the system to continue to develop. And again, if it becomes an option that school districts want and they see value in it, then they can move to it.
Okay. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Pratt, I think this is a sound way to approach this, and some of the other comments are really good. One of the things is that when it comes to IT, the concept of interoperability is very different from using a common format. And so we all think sometimes we have to take down the silos. No, sometimes you just need to make it possible to communicate, and that's where the common format is so crucial. So you can still have that. As to Senator Dahl's comment about the younger folks coming out and not doing that, that is something for the future. But the one thing that I have found, though, is that when you centralize a system, you lose some of those uniques that come from either quantity, a lot of students, or only a few. And it's very difficult to do that on a centralized basis, to balance out both of those. That's going to take quite a challenge, and probably the bigger one than even the common format. I think the reason why I think this is such a good approach is the risks that are involved, especially when you have a mandated statewide, because the sense that you're only in the process right now of 8 months, that puts us in a significant risk for a crucial function that is both legal compliance and also just able to help students and all of that. So when you have school districts currently functioning, I just think that going out this way is also lowering the risks involved with specific hard deadlines. It gives you a little more flexibility. The cost savings as well, I would tell you that centralizing the extra training and some of those things, I don't know if you can call this a cost savings or an efficiency at all, because now you're disrupting what's already working for 80% of the school districts and requiring them to go through that. And that is a cost, and it is a loss of efficiency, and maybe you have a long-term goal here, but I think that taking it this approach is a very sound way to do it for just a variety of reasons. So thank you for bringing it forward, Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering, Senator Pratt, you mentioned that in your last comment was that this new bill will require the new vendor to be compatible with existing district formats. Is that what you stated? Okay. For Mr. Cordy, is that something that you've shared with the vendor then? Are they comfortable with that requirement being added, and will that still fit within the what they've responded to the state as what they can provide for the dollar amount?
Mr. Cordy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Wicklund, I think we need to just bring this, the new compatibility language there that's on page one of the amendment, back to our IT folks and have them take a look at it. As I said, the contract is still being negotiated, so nothing is kind of final at this point. So I'm hoping that a change like this would be something that could be incorporated. But I would want to, you know, check with our IT folks and our vendors to make sure.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Senator Wicklund, the intent here is that the department would establish what that common format is. And it's other systems that districts choose to use would have to be able to communicate with the MDE system. So it should not, I hope, require any additional work on the department, rather for third-party vendors to comply with the state standard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wicklund.
Senator Pratt, so you're saying that school districts that have an existing system, they will have to make sure their existing system is interfaces with the new system and do whatever work they need to make that happen. Is that correct?
Chair Pratt. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Wicklund, yes, local districts or their vendors, and their vendors will typically make updates and update releases, so I wouldn't expect that this would be a major hurdle. If it is, in all honesty, we should look at a system that local school districts then should consider being looking at the state system or another system that can meet that requirement. The goal here is to make sure that regardless of what district a student transfers to, that their records can be transferred effectively.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I think that is a very important goal, that we have that ability to transfer records seamlessly. I just want to make sure that we take into account the requirements that we're placing on either the new vendor, you know, that they know that up front, that they're going to have to work towards that, or defining that format. And then in the other case, if it's the district's responsibility, that they know that that might be coming to them as well. So.
It's noted. Thank you. Is there any further testimony in the audience on Senate File 740 as amended? We have four people that are approaching or so. In whichever order you deem. And again, please state your name, who you represent.
Good morning, Chair Wieger. My name is David Aaron, members of the committee. My name is David Aaron. I'm representing Education Minnesota. And I just want to start off by saying thank you to Senator Pratt and to the previous speakers who have testified. We're glad that this debate has moved from whether we should repeal the statewide system that was just created last year and already a lot of time and money has been invested into to a debate over whether it should be mandatory. But we still feel that it's premature to make changes to this law that had broad bipartisan support last year. I'll just point out that the system doesn't become mandatory in the current legislation until 2018. There are three legislative sessions between now and that time. If the system isn't delivering what it is intended to deliver, there is time to make the system optional before 2018. So I'd just like all of you to consider that. Senator Kiffmeyer's point about the uniqueness of each district system, I certainly appreciate that. However, I just want to point out that every school district in the state of Minnesota is subject to the identical federal and state special education laws. So I would share Senator Bonoff's point and concern that if everyone is subject to the same laws, they should use the same system. The inconsistency in the system, it has created a lot of problems for special education teachers transferring records. This does address that by requiring compatibility. I'm not fully convinced that just putting in the language compatible solves the problem, because it's not clear what compatibility means. Does that mean that a district, a vendor system that has, you know, a number of additional locally created requirements is compatible with the statewide system? From the language alone, I'm not entirely clear about that. And then on the issue of costs, Senator Bonoff did talk about her interest in seeing, would this system reduce special education costs? Education Minnesota has done a data request to all school districts in the state to see how much they're currently spending on their special education systems. We have some preliminary data. In Big Lake, which is not a huge school district, that district is spending approximately $17,000 a year on their special education IEP vendors. With this current legislation, starting in 2015-16, the system is available to every district in the state at no cost. Obviously, there's costs in maintaining the system, but we think that using the state's bargaining power to negotiate this contract, it can be much more efficient and cost-effective for districts. And then, so I would just like you to, you know, exercise caution in repealing this law that was just passed last session, and we'll have some further testimony by one of the House authors of the legislation that created this system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Heather Brooks. I'm a special education teacher in District 196, which is the Egan Apple Valley Rosemont School District. I have been a resource teacher at an elementary school in Apple Valley for 22 years, and I service K through 5 students with a variety of disabilities. We continue to have concerns with this bill as amended. I had the opportunity to actually work on the special education electronic work group with the Department of Education this past spring that was charged due to this bill with reviewing various IEP forms from other states to identify the components that would be included in an electronic system for Minnesota and to identify the components that would constitute a comprehensive special education electronic system for Minnesota. We also reviewed the statewide electronic systems that are in place in Colorado and in Maryland. We spoke to Colorado, who currently uses the vendor Enrich, through a conference call, and they are very pleased with their statewide system. At the completion of our work, we had spent countless hours compiling the components of a statewide system that we felt would work in Minnesota. As a veteran teacher, I've seen the time to complete special education paperwork increase tremendously. I don't think anyone disagrees that the time to complete paperwork on the students who case manage is too long. The statewide electronic system bill started the process and conversation about excessive time spent on special education paperwork. There are several advantages that one statewide electronic system could provide if it was given a chance to implement. Paperwork and electronic transfers between districts as students move within Minnesota is consistent, easier, and timely, with less disruption of services for students. Better consistency with MDE requirements for auditing purposes. Reduction of paperwork redundancy. With the statewide system that we looked and the vendor that we chose, Enrich, there is drop-down menus, goal banks, pre-populated data areas, and prompts that will reduce time to complete the necessary paperwork that current online systems don't have. I use an online system in my district, and it doesn't have that capability. Tutorials to assist teachers on paperwork processes, that's another addition that would be included. Electronic system reduces paperwork by incorporating only federal and state requirements and eliminates extra forms imposed district by district in the state of Minnesota, and it would give us more time to teach our students. As a teacher who works in special education every day, something needs to be done to address the special education paperwork. This is the first step to begin the process to alleviate excess special education paperwork in Minnesota. One mandated statewide electronic system has many advantages for reducing paperwork and would benefit students, as the reduction would allow more time for teachers to teach our most needy of students. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brooks. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mary Swatsky, and thank you, committee, for bringing this very important topic to light again. I am here today as a 30-year special education teacher and the author of the special education online system legislation that was passed on bipartisan basis last year. I appreciate the provision in the amendment that strikes repealing the system. And while I don't think that making the system optional is the way to go, I am thankful that we are talking about special education once again. I would like to give you some background on the legislation that passed and how it came to be. In the 2013, the Office of Legislative Auditor released an evaluation report offering key facts and findings along with key recommendations. And three critical points from the report were: MDE should evaluate its monitoring process to identify ways to improve special education teachers' understanding of compliance requirements. Two, MDE should continue efforts to streamline paperwork required in special education and identify effective practices from districts to encourage additional efficiencies. And three, MDE should update its special education rules for consistency with Minnesota statutes. The report summary stated many Minnesota statutes and rules on special education exceed federal requirements, but analysis of their educational economic impacts are not available. Of the 75 Minnesota statutes we studied that specifically govern special education, 19 contained at least one provision that exceeds federal requirements, plus nearly 78% of the 57 Minnesota rules we analyze contain provisions that exceed federal requirements. After that report came out, a committee convened with a broad spectrum of stakeholders, including parents, lawyers, directors, MACE, co-ops, administrators, teachers, advocacy groups, a legislator, and the Department of Education. This committee worked for 6 months to evaluate the workload versus caseload dilemma, which is in direct correlation to paperwork reduction. The committee also reviewed the process or the progress of the $1.7 million that was allotted to them prior to my work in the legislature. I wanted to take the work of the committee and put it into action. I went to work and sought opinions from those in the field. A survey was sent to Minnesota special education teachers with 73.3% supporting a statewide online system. Overwhelmingly, the results showed paperwork as the most frustrating element in their workday, along with the redundancy of the paperwork and the time it takes away from the direct student-to-teacher face-to-face instruction. Frustrations were felt that this time is better spent on developing meaningful lessons for their students. On January 5th, 2015, I went back into the classroom as a full-time special education teacher. This year, my district switched vendors for due process, and due process is the unfunded mandate of paperwork in special education. As I was working on a new IEP, which is an individual education plan, I realized that with vendor A from last year, this document was a 5-page report. With the new vendor B, same student, needs had not changed drastically, was 14 pages. So when I send that home, that's back-to-back, 2.5 pages to a parent, or 7 pages back-to-back to a parent. My colleagues in the spring, when we were switching over to the new vendor, had a 2-hour in-service, which was not going to be implemented until another 5 months later. So in our district was quite little with having an in-service and learning our new system on our level. I'm not saying that the district level learning the system. Mr. Chair, Minnesota presently has seven vendors for due process. All include the federal requirements. Each contain Minnesota state mandates. And every vendor includes local district reporting requirements mandates. I've been receiving inquiries from different agencies, directors, lobbyists, co-ops, teachers, wondering how a statewide online system alleviates paperwork. I've been transparent all along this journey. This law is a start on the online system, and it's the beginning step in addressing the volume of redundancy and paperwork for special education teachers. Last year, I had bipartisan support to reduce state mandates. I wish my colleagues, and I hope yet, who were so on board last year and who had stories of their own to share from right in their own homes, their spouses,
would have taken the next step to reduce some of these state mandates. In the legislation that passed, we used a $1.7 million appropriation that had previously been given to MDE to work on reducing paperwork and outlined a clear path to begin this work with the development of a uniform statewide system. In addition to the reduction in paperwork and more clarity and uniformity in reporting requirements such as drop-downs, tutorials, which help when you're working on a Saturday afternoon, such as I, when I was having trouble with the existing vendor, nobody to talk to because it's Saturday afternoon. Those drop-downs would have helped or tutorials. It is also important to note that Minnesota schools will have access to a free due process. Student teachers will tackle and learn the system while in college rather than out in the schools. Parents will become familiar with the document no matter how mobile. Translations into various languages will be unified and available for all Minnesota school districts. Teachers will have access immediately from district to district with confidentiality. In hearing concerns from some of those with this new system, we will give MDE greater access, that will give MDE greater access and mobility to monitor, and that this will somehow create more paperwork, not less. It is my understanding that MDE chooses not to be the keeper of the manager of the information. A third-party server vendor will be in control of the data. Representative Holberg and Scott in the House were adamant that this information would be tracked, recorded, and handled by only those in direct consent in need of the information per FERPA, which is Family Education Rights and Privacy. Today, MDE monitors files located in schools, not our present computer systems. Minnesota has a special education teacher shortage. Those in the field have identified the problem. A statewide online system is creating the foundation for this and is a step in the right direction for helping our special educators so that they have more time with their students. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Skwatsky, and for your public service. Next. Mr. Heller. Senator Kiffmeyer.
I'll wait till Mr. Heller's done.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman,
you.
I have a question.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair and Education Committee and members, for the opportunity to speak on 740A2. I didn't know before. I unofficially represent the twice exceptional and print disabled. Ask that be actually in the minutes. It's important. That's unofficial. Perhaps this is some of the things that I find interesting as we continue to go into electronic information. There's a statute. I provided a handout to the chair. Everyone's welcome to it. One is from the Minnesota Department of Education, from ADASH. Another one is from House Research, which goes into content accessibility, which is 16.03 subdivision 9. I would ask if the chair would allow the Department of Education to yield to one of these specific questions today. And the question would be, are third-party vendors, including school districts, exempt from Statute 16 Content Accessibility Law? And how does Content Accessibility Law relate with this SIF that's in the Department of Education report? I believe it's on the second page. And because we know that MNsure report, and which is recent, and the Special Education report, again, by the auditor, kind of glossed over the fact of accessibility law. I think that would be relevant to engagement for the individual. So, again, these new systems, as the legislature has in our Constitution, has a directive to make sure that systems become uniform and or standardized. And if that's foundational and platforms, are we considering Statute 16E? Which is 03 point subdivision 9. So, I asked the chair if the Department of Education would ask the Department of Education to yield to the question that if our school districts exempting themselves for content accessibility and how perhaps that might interfere as we get a system that's everybody's going
Thank
to be
you,
doing
Mr.
sometime.
Yes, Mr. Cortez here and Brief response.
Mr. Chair, Darren Cordy again from the Minnesota Department of Education. School districts are government entities and are subject to the state accessibility statutes and guidelines just as the agency is. I'd also note that as a vendor with the state system would also have to adhere to the state and the state accessibility guidelines and statutes.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. Thank you, Mr. Hiller.
Excuse me, Chair, but if you look at the correspondence, I say otherwise, and I think that's very relevant that Minute spoke last year when they rescind a lot of the requirements, legislature exempt, and again, the correspondence from the department this year, and specifically the House research says that third parties are exempt. And I think as we continue to move with individuals perhaps that are twice exceptional that like to be in education and use this sort of technology to access these databases, probably part of the SHEDS program, State Longitudinal Education Data System, that that we need to make sure that, that they're fully functional regarding 508 and 2.0 web content accessibility guidelines when these individuals are engaged with this material. I appreciate any feedback or discussion in the future regarding this.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Heller. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I just want to clarify after the other three testifiers that seem to think that our discussion is around having a state system or not, and that is not the case. I think there are issues that I see here that have more to do with do you make it optional later or mandatory later? Because I think there's a tremendous amount of risk. We have a large state system which just recently reached headline proportions and a very large issue. And so that computer system was supposed to be up and running, supposed to do this, supposed to do that, and it did not. And so a lot of people go through a lot of pain and suffering when that happens. And so when you have an opportunity now to help mitigate those risks by giving people time to make that transition, time to lower those risks, time to make sure that the functionality that you're doing right now continues in very critical special education students. You have teachers that are already in the system. So I just will say again that the having of a state system and some of the comments and the Office of the Legislative Auditor and some of those things, that discussion is all still very relevant. The only thing here is that now is the time to make this optional so that you mitigate your risks. And when people have a situation where it doesn't come when it's expected to say, well, we can just go later now and make it optional, That is not a very sound a way to do that, I believe. I think now is the time. We are the legislature. This is the time to help mitigate those risks. And the cost savings, in particular, my school was used here. I've seen this before, too, where it's going to save and it's not going to cost, and there's just going to be a little bit of this maintenance. So we haven't gotten to the point yet where we even know because it's not up and running. We don't know that it's actually going to do that. But my bigger concern is the functionality and that we mitigate our risks now, not later when we're in a mess or in a crisis.
No. Further testimony. Mr. Kermes.
Thank you, Mr. Wieger. Darren Kermes again, Southwest Metro Educational Cooperative. First of all, I would just applaud the work of the teachers, Representative Swoski, the rest, to look at paperwork reduction. Special education teachers are drowning in paperwork. That is true. It is absolutely true. My only concern is this the, and I appreciate the part, this is the first step. How far will this get us? One of the comments made was that the system will be free. Some of our systems already are free. For example, those districts that use the TIES system, it is free to them. So there are already some of the existing systems that are. The state, my another point is that the state doesn't mandate student data systems or HR systems or financial systems, and sometimes districts choose their special ed system to be compatible with that so that it automatically populates with student data and information. And in New Prague, one of my member districts, when they use a system when the teacher pulls up the screen with the student information, it has a flag that will say if they have a health plan or an IEP or a 504 plan, because it's compatible and it just populates that screen for them. I would also say the 18-19 year is simply too early. It takes time. It's going to take time to pilot this and get it rolling and gear up. And if that's the deadline on the end, it's not that that's the start. You need a year or two to train your staff to get ready for it. So pilot it, make sure it works. If it does, then push that piece out. I would also leave one last example on the specific question of the why districts have forms that aren't required. I have been complaining for years, even going back to my time at the department, about all of the excessive forms. I will give you an example from Mankato. John Klaber used to be the special education director there. And if he were sitting here today, he would tell you of a complaint that he received from the Department of Education where it was kind of a he said, she said with the parent. And the district was found in violation because they didn't have notes of a meeting. There is no such thing as a mandatory meeting note form in special ed. It doesn't exist. They were found in violation because they didn't have it. So what do you think Mankato did to protect their teachers in their district? They created a form. So now they mandate notes during that time. That's just an example where it's outside. We can look to narrowing, but to what the federal law requires in terms of forms, but districts still are going to need some of these pieces to cover other things that are simply required. You simply have to do that to do good business practice in the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kermes.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Kermes touched on some of the things that I was going to mention. We're all concerned about the costs for system maintenance and training. I just believe that the legislature should allow local districts to determine and decide whether a statewide system is cost effective. There's nothing in the laws that we're changing that reduce paperwork or reduce the amount of effort. All we're talking about is a system, a computer system. And with the amendment, we're allowing for that centralization of data that former Representative Swatsky talked about. And so we'll achieve that. So, Mr. Chair, I think this is a common sense meet in the middle bill that still allows the legislature and the department to not manage local school districts, but to provide guidelines and policies and allowing local districts, administrators, teachers to decide how to best serve students. And with that,
I was going to suggest that, you know, to keep it alive, and I want to commend you for reaching out and the amendments that have just been coming forward, and I think that continued dialogue would be helpful. Judiciary has asked to see the bill, due process aspects, and so if there would be the commitment where you would continue to, you know, work with the interested stakeholders, as we all do, on our legislation, that Senate file 740 as amended be re-referred without recommendation to the Committee on Judiciary, and then it's alive. You can continue the recommendations, because I think there's some additional wording that additional dialogue that needs to occur based on the testimony, and I don't think we have time right now to perfect that, and with Judiciary in line anyway, it might be better served to proceed that way, if you would wish to make a motion to that effect.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. I would certainly prefer that it come out of this committee with a positive recommendation, but I'll take your suggestion and regardless, make a move to move the Senate file 740 out of committee and then to and re-refer to Judiciary.
Yeah, as amended, and on that motion, I think it's clear with the intent, and the dialogue will continue further without recommendation. Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Thank you, Senator Pratt, and all the testifiers. Next, we have Senate File 434, Senator Chamberlain.
System.
Stand file 434.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank Senator Pratt for putting us back on schedule here.
All right.
So we appreciate that. That said, Mr. Chair, what we have here is Senate File 434. It is a simple, straightforward bill, partially at the request of MDE, delaying the implementation or review of the mass standards. As you know, reviewing these standards can be time-consuming, costly, and there's always a desire for consistency over the years for the students. So just changing the mass standards and any standards too frequently often disrupts the system, and we've seen that in recent years with changes in different standards and proficiencies going down. So with that, I'll let Mr. Huser comment on that further.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Huser, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Chamberlain, for bringing this bill forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committees, for letting me testify to it. MDE is in support of this legislation, and for two points. One is we feel that the standards right now are strong and are working. And two, the implementation of the standards process is long and lengthy, and we feel that we would be doing the districts a disservice by having them. They're just now fully implementing the current standards. We feel that the standards that were done in 2007 are sufficient. We've not heard any complaint that they are not rigorous enough or too rigorous. But we want to continue to have districts the ability to implement as they are now. We also feel that if we can continue the current standards, we can continue to collect student data that we're getting with assessments and have something that we can refer back for going forward. And it'll be a little bit more informative for us and to the districts as we move along. We think that the date that's being picked now is appropriate for a possible review of the standards in the future.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate File 434? Mr. Heller.
Rick Heller again speaking for the Twice Exceptional on Senate File 434. I don't know who out there knows about this, but when they created our national standards, it's a sequential thing. However, it does not address the top-down thinkers, perhaps those that are twice exceptional learners. And if it's missing that, the members might consider, if they're going to relook at it, they should consider the top-down view, again, not sequential learners, but the visual and perceptual ability learners. And basically, that's all I have to add to this conversation. Thank you for this opportunity to speak on this.
Thank you. Mr. Heller and Mr. Huser, a response regarding that observation?
I'm sure that as we review the standards in the future, there is a time for comment from the public. So any questions that we might get from the print disabled community, we would definitely take into consideration at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Huser.
Thank you, Chair.
Heller.
I appreciate Educate Minnesota representing saying something about the print disabled. However, we don't quite have wrapped our hands around how those individuals gather and acquire information effectively. The piece of this, again, is if there really has been public engagement on the national level regarding top-down and that they were never designed for those type of learners. It's my suggestion, again, that our leaders take an important look at this at a local level and address it.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Is there anyone else that would like to testify in Senate File 434? If not, does Senator Chamberlain move that Senate File 434 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. And members, thank you for being so timely, and the reward is we will not need to meet later this afternoon. On Tuesday, Finance Committee is meeting during this time block, so we aren't meeting then. We will be meeting on Wednesday, and it's posted, the various bills. I believe there's 8 or 9, and it'll start with the education policy bill from the department. There's a number of provisions in there. Again, it's online. You can see those provisions. If we don't finish Wednesday morning, we'll go into the evening. Again, that's all posted. On Thursday, we'll have Senate File 97, Senator Bonoff on teacher seniority provisions, and House File 2, Senator Pratt's bill on teacher licensure, various other items, and we'll meet into the evening if necessary on those two. The following week, we have our first policy deadline. That's March 20, and working back from that, it's my hope that on the 19th, on Thursday, we might be able to complete action. We would have the draft bill posted during the week and would meet with each respective caucus, as has been done in the past, to share it, and as you prepare for potential amendments. There would be a hearing during the week, probably on the 18th as well as the 19th, where we would further discuss the bill. And we're doing everything we can, as you know, to accommodate as many requests for hearings as we can, but it is getting rather tight right now. So that's where we're at on the policy bill, and keep it in mind that if a policy bill does have financial implications, ultimately it would be rolled in for possible consideration for the finance bill, which has another deadline in April. But we have been concurrently hearing a number of those items and passing some of those from policy to finance. So you know what I mean? We're policy, we're finance, but we wear a separate hat for those reviews. So that's where we're at. Any questions at this point? If not, we will see you at our next meeting on Wednesday and as well on Thursday, and be prepared for an evening session on Thursday if need be. There being no further business, we're adjourned.